Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Josh Rogers. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. Head of New Hampshire Hospital is out, and Dartmouth Hitchcock is under renewed scrutiny after staffing issues at the state's mental hospital. Full-day kindergarten wins solid support in the New Hampshire House, as does a revamped rape shield law. House lawmakers also opted to review the social media posts of the Laconia Republican behind a misogynistic Reddit forum. That and much more, including Congress's action on health care yesterday on The Exchange's New Hampshire News Roundup. I am Josh Rogers, joined this week by Jeff Feingold of the New Hampshire Business Review, Kathleen Ronan of the Associated Press, and Dean Spiliotis, Southern New Hampshire University. I want to start with New Hampshire Hospital and Dartmouth Hitchcock. Mental health has been a focus of a policy push by Governor Sununu and top lawmakers. A $336 million contract with Dartmouth Hitchcock was heavily politicized during election season, including by then executive counselor and gubernatorial candidate Chris Sununu. What happened on this front this week, Kathleen?
Yeah, so they announced this week that the head of New Hampshire Hospital had been, Bob McLeod, had been asked to resign. Basically, what Jeff Myers apparently discovered over the past couple days is that the contract called for Dartmouth Hitchcock to be staffing New Hampshire Hospital with 11 psychiatrists and one specific geriatric psychiatrist. And apparently, for some time, they'd only been staffing the hospital with 8 to 10 general psychiatrists, and they had promoted someone that left a geriatric psychiatrist position open. So apparently this had long been going on. It doesn't appear, at least officials are saying, that no one has told them that quality of care at the hospital suffered. But no one really knew that this was going on because of what looks like a clerical error. I think the executive council, they were getting these staffing updates, and my understanding is that somehow the staffing paper looked like the hospital only needed to have 10 psychiatrists, so no one noticed that they didn't have the required 11. And Counselor Chris Pappas started asking some questions, which prompted Jeff Myers to look into it, realized the terms of the contract weren't being fulfilled, and then everything kind of hit the fan. So that's what happened this week. Dartmouth Hitchcock has had 5 business days to respond to this letter of noncompliance from Jeff Myers. They are pretty aggressively pushing back, saying, look, we've been transparent the whole time. Everybody agreed quality of care was where it needed to be, and we're pretty surprised by some of these very harsh statements that are coming out from the governor
and
from Jeff
Myers.
Well, the
governor was pretty agitated. Why don't we take a listen to just what he said, why he needed to take action there this week?
It's troubling, it's disappointing, but it's something that just simply requires immediate action, and which we've taken.
And that immediate action was essentially canning, Bob McLeod, who was the director there. And
pretty publicly putting Dartmouth Hitchcock on notice that they...
Well, they said that they couldn't be trusted.
Yeah.
And this is something that Dartmouth Hitchcock has pushed back on. And it's interesting, the governor's take now, I mean, I mentioned during the lead-in that, you know, he was quite critical, largely for political reasons, I think, of the contract as it went through. There was a lot of back and forth about whether Dartmouth Hitchcock would be able to fulfill the contract. Incumbent staffers at the hospital were concerned that wasn't going to happen. During a tour of Concord Hospital where the governor was talking about his efforts to boost mental health services, he was asked about his confidence in Dartmouth Hitchcock's ability to fulfill that contract. Why don't we take a listen to what he said? This was 2 weeks ago today.
We brought to light a lot of the concerns that we had, and I commend Dartmouth Hitchcock for, I think, stepping up to the plate and addressing a lot of the legitimate concerns that we had at the time. We do get a staffing report now, I think, every couple weeks from Jeff Myers, which we asked for to make sure that we're meeting the staffing levels, making sure that there is a system for concerns from the staff as well as concerns from the patients. So the system has clearly gotten better, and I do commend Dartmouth Hitchcock for addressing a lot of those issues.
All right. That was Governor Sununu 2 weeks ago. So, Jeff, obviously quite a different tone then than now.
Yeah, it's like it's I think maybe some political winds were blowing. But also, I think it does make you realize that, you know, some people criticize the executive council, but apparently it was doing its job this time. You know, Chris Pappas was the one who was asking the questions about it. Apparently no one else was thought, at least in the governor's office at this point. Well, it looks like we had the same kind of concerns that maybe Chris Pappas did, or at least questions about it.
Well, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say one other thing. This has not been a very good year or so for Dartmouth-Hitchcock. They've had some serious issues with, you know, layoffs and various other things where actually they had to bring on a couple of people who are pretty well known in New Hampshire to kind of be their public face, and that's Josh McKelvin from Channel 9, formerly of Channel 9, and former Chief Justice Broderick.
Yeah, they ought to lace up their boots at this point.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they're not out there right now because, they've really been trying to do a lot of damage control on many issues, and here's just another one just piled onto their plate, and I find that really interesting because, you know, it's pretty much the largest employer in New Hampshire, and it's known through it's a brand not only in New Hampshire but around this part of the country. And
it did seem. I mean, on hiring of those two, it did seem an effort, perhaps a recognition that they've been facing scrutiny and gotten some bad press, and that maybe they needed to go kind of more local in their, you know, on the ground representation.
Absolutely, which is why they're going for, especially for Justice Broderick, who's, you know, he's obviously someone with great integrity, and they have him there now, but I don't know where he's not out here for this thing, and you think this is the thing he'd be going out on.
Well, as Kathleen said, that Dartmouth does have a few days to respond, and the statement that they issued did say that you know, their staffing has been appropriate, and that they were surprised and deeply troubled by the tenor of the criticism, and that the governor and council contemplated trying to, you know, kind of claw back payments to Dartmouth-Hitchcock, reflecting shortages of staffing. Dartmouth-Hitchcock says that's not even really relevant.
Yeah, well, they said it's a fixed price contract, so it's not like the contract says, you know, you pay us X amount of money for every psychiatrist that we are providing. And what I think if some of the controversy that has happened over this past year that Jeff mentioned hadn't happened, I don't think we'd be seeing this reaction, because the interesting thing is no one is coming out and saying, look, quality of care at New Hampshire hospitals suffered. And Joe Kenney, Republican executive counselor, came in the press room the other day, and he was kind of like, you know, he said something along the lines of like, where are the bodies? You know, like this is blowing up. But he said his understanding was that everything was appropriately staffed to the need. And it was kind of like, well, why would we bring in an additional person if we really don't need them? And so it's been really hard to figure out, like, did quality of care actually suffer? Did people just not want to look bad when they found out that no one noticed an error? It kind of seems more like that. I mean, it's obviously very political, very tense. And, you know, I haven't been able to talk to Bob McLeod. I don't know how he's feeling about this whole thing, the head of New Hampshire Hospital that got pushed out. But he's, you know, seems to be kind of they decided, you know, a head needed to roll in it, and it was his.
Yeah, you know, I think part of the reason why Governor Sununu seems exercised about this is because of this larger political context. If you go back to when the contract was initially voted on, this was part of a larger issue surrounding the reorganization of the Dartmouth Medical School and the shifting of some responsibilities to DHMC Hospital and the renegotiation of contracts at the state hospital. And they needed to bring some doctors down from Lebanon, but that left beds open and that they couldn't use in Lebanon. So there was this whole sort of staffing issue that went on. And then we had the contract being approved. And then Dartmouth-Hitchcock announcing the layoffs a day or two later. And you remember Sununu suggested that there was some sort of coordination between, you know, Hassan, Governor Hassan and Jeff Myers and DHMC, that the fix was sort of in. And so, you know, this has been a little chip on his shoulder for a while now. And so he finally got his opportunity to strike back on it.
Yeah, and also just to put this in perspective on not having that geriatric psychiatrist. You know, there's a very extreme healthcare labor shortage in New Hampshire, and that's probably one of the reasons that they can't find a geriatric psychiatrist. I mean, it's hard to, that's a specialty that may be very difficult to fill. I wouldn't know, but I would think it's not the easiest thing to find. So. There's your missing psychiatrist.
And one of the oldest, you know, one of the states with the highest, the oldest average age of population.
Exactly.
And, you know, for the record, the person who's been tapped to be the interim head of New Hampshire Hospital is somebody well-known in state mental health and public health circles, former Health and Human Services Commissioner Donald Shumway, who, after leaving the job, he was commissioner under Gene Shaheen, worked at and led Crotchet Mountain Rehabilitation Center. So Commissioner Shumway is back on the scene. We'll see. He was somebody used to dealing with tense situations at the Department of Health and Human Services. You know, Dartmouth Hitchcock isn't the only entity with a PR issue these days. This week in the New Hampshire House, two state reps, you know, have their own PR challenge. I think it's fair to say that one of them has a steeper challenge than the other over social media posts. Republican Robert Fisher of Laconia, who launched the Red Pill Forum on Reddit, and yesterday the House voted to add Sherry Frost, a Democrat from Dover, who is, you know, sort of somewhat known for kind of barbed political tweeting from the House chamber, to an inquiry that's going to go to the Legislative Administration Committee. Kathleen, we were both there. You know, procedurally, the House is a bit at sea over how this was going to work. What do you think people ought to know about this?
Yeah, so you're right. There was mass confusion. They were voting on stuff that they didn't really have in hard copy in front of them. No one seemed to understand what exactly they were voting on. But basically, you know, what they've decided to do is have this legislative committee look into Robert Fisher and Sherry Frost. And I don't even know if I would say investigate, because it's, you know, it doesn't really seem like they have that much force, right? And the scope of this inquiry is just going to be things that happen this term. So they're supposed to be bringing both of these representatives in, having them give their side of the story, looking into things, and they're going to make a recommendation to the House. Should the House take action? Should the House, you know, censure these people? Should they ask them to resign? What should happen? But when you're looking at Fisher in particular, you know, he supposedly created this forum several years ago, you know, before he was in the New Hampshire House. Some of the more egregious comments that he made would have been made prior to this term starting. You know, that original article about him stated that he's no longer the moderator of that forum. It has not been for at least some time, although he's occasionally commented. So it's kind of unclear how much teeth this inquiry actually has, because it's only allowed to look at things that happened this session.
Speaker Jasper explained this to the House chamber. Why don't we take a listen to how he put it yesterday?
It would not be appropriate, in my opinion, and in my instructions to the committee, it would be to only look at statements that have been written or made during this term of office. We certainly cannot go back and start looking at what any of us have said before this term of office, anything that may have been said previously. You know, it was a matter for the voters. But, you know, it would not, there would be no way to end anything like this if there were not a hard limit of this term of office from the day that we were sworn in.
All right. That was Speaker Jasper. Sounded like he was kind of making that up on the fly. you know, understandably, this is unchartered territory for the House in some ways. I mean, the House is a place where, you know, free speech, even occasionally offensive speech, is, if not prized, definitely tolerated. People have made the case that Robert Fisher's posts in this Reddit forum, where he said, you know, horrible things about women, and has, you know, the most controversial comment, which he says has been taken out of context, is that, right, you know, which was rape isn't an absolute bad. You know, but this does go back years, and this is speech, and according to the House Speaker, he's unaware of any comments by Fisher, and I don't think by Frost either, that would constitute a clear violation of House ethics standards.
Yeah, I think what this goes to is just the sheer size of the New Hampshire House and the vetting process in getting candidates, I think, and you know, really. A lot of down ballot races, like House races, we've seen this over and over again, where there are candidates who actually get elected, and then all of a sudden we find out something about them, this constituents find out something about them, and they went, oh my God, what did we do? And this is, I think, is an example. I think if this kind of information was up when he was running for election, I would think I know it's Belknap County, but I would think he'd have a difficult time getting elected as a Republican.
This involved a fair bit of sleuthing by the Daily Beast to actually figure out that Fisher was the person behind the Reddit, you know, the Reddit forum. And you're absolutely right, Jeff. We've talked about this many times over the years. You know, as long as I've been doing this, I've always been surprised by some of the people who get elected to the House of Representatives, and it's because most voters. Well, you spent too much time there, Josh. But the issue is that when you're voting that far down ballot, people typically go by, you know, Republican or Democrat. They don't necessarily know. You know, it's ironic because in a sense it's supposed to be we have such a large House of Representatives because you have, you know, one rep per every 3,000 people roughly. So there's supposed to be a better chance that you sort of know what you're getting, but that's just not.
It reminds me of a case many years ago with Tom Alciere. He was a rep in Nashua who, after he was elected, discovered that he had been writing these really just
advocating the death of police.
Yeah, advocating the death of killing police officers. And all of a sudden, oh my God, how did we get this guy? Well, he was on your ballot. You know, the Republicans recruited him allowed him to run, and that's how it happens. I remember
that was, you know, years ago, but I remember when Tom Alciere arrived for legislative orientation, you know, people are in the cafeteria kind of, you know, getting to know each other, and there was kind of everyone's like, oh, there's Tom Alciere. And it was sort of like that yesterday in the House chamber, because Fisher is not somebody who, with a great attendance record, he's shown up for about half of his roll call votes. He doesn't sit on a committee at his own request. And you know, certainly there were a lot of reporters, you know, Kathleen and myself included, keeping our eyes peeled for his arrival yesterday. But you could sense he was in the ante room and, you know, people kind of looking askance at him. And he hung back there and then only entered the chamber once the debate was on. You know, he stuck around. He voted, as did Frost, for the final vote for their review. And after the House broke for lunch, he kind of slipped out one of the back ways out of the chamber, and you know, there's a stairwell that spits you out by in the Hall of Flags, essentially, and caught up with him down there, and he didn't want to talk much, but why don't we take a listen to what he did say? And he predicted that, you know, things would go well for him before this committee.
Yes, absolutely, because I think that the truth will be out. Everything I had to say on it, I already released in my statement in the Laconia Daily Sun.
So that was Fisher yesterday. That was about all he had to say. He you know, quickly made his way out of the front door of the State House. He was surrounded by this kind of, you know, quartet of, you know, sort of burly guys, all wearing dark suits and darker sunglasses. You know, we'll see how it goes. He's going to be before the committee. And Representative Frost, who was sort of yoked into this, you know, with a floor amendment, you know, when we talked to her, why don't we take a listen to what she said about her tweets?
Hyperbole is not the same as vicious misogyny. You know, I mean, we've all been hungry enough to say, oh my goodness, I'm starving. I haven't eaten lunch. I'm starving. You know, people make me crazy. That's essentially what I said. And, you know, it's still out there. I haven't deleted anything. I have no intention of deleting anything. I'm not concerned.
All right, that was Representative Sherry Frost of Dover. And the vote to add her, there was a floor amendment to add her to the inquiry. That passed by just two votes. You know, the bill to review both of them passed 307 to 56. And, you know, one thing that Frost said is that she believes in some ways, you know, adding her to this may have given, you know, Republicans more cover to vote for a review of Fisher, whatever that.
I think that's some of the thought. I also think, you know, Democratic Representative Jackie Silly, she got up and she essentially, you know, slammed this amendment as saying that it's a complete false equivalency to equate a couple of tweets. And I think the big ones that Republicans had criticized with Representative Frost, in one, she said something along the lines of, we have a terrorist problem and they're mostly white Christian men. And in another one, she said something about people making her homicidal. I can't remember exactly
men
what it was.
Men who tell her to calm down.
Right.
That makes her
homicidal, so, she said. And the Republican Party had kind of, you know, gotten up in arms about this, said she needed to be talked to, but people are saying it's not the same as the red pill.
It is setting an unusual precedent, especially in terms of the era of social media, going to investigate every rep who comes up with offensive
language. Yeah, a lot of them like to tweet.
Exactly.
So.
That's true. We'll be back after a short break. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on the Exchange. I'm Josh Rogers. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on the Exchange. I'm Josh Rogers. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email at exchange@nhpr.org or on Twitter and Facebook at NHPR Exchange. You can find us there. Joined this morning by Dean Spilio of Southern New Hampshire University, Kathleen Ronan of the Associated Press, and Jeff Feingold of the New Hampshire Business Review. Kind of self-examination and self-reflection wasn't the only item on the agenda for the House this week. They also passed some significant bills, like full-day kindergarten passed at the $14.5 million a year version, 247 to 116, every House Democrat, a bit less than half of the GOP. This bill still has to go to finance, but, you know, the floor vote, you know, seems to put wind at this bill's back. I mean, is this a done deal, Catherine, do you think?
Well, I think it has to go to finance, and finance is actually going to evaluate the price tag, right? And we know, I mean, Representative Lynn Ober, who is a key member of the Finance Committee, got up on the floor yesterday and she said that she thought the price tag was actually a little bit lowballed. So I think that they're going to be looking at whether the state has the money to do this very specifically. And you never know. I mean, they could move to... I mean, policy-wise, you know, the House has made the decision that they support this idea of more funding for full-day kindergarten, but could finance attempt to go back to some type of grant program like the governor had initially wanted? I think that's certainly possible. But, you know, 87 Republicans backed this, which certainly shows that there is a push to get this done. I think it also, you know, reveals yet another divide in the House Republican caucus and kind of a fight over, you know, who is a good Republican and who is not, and what is a key Republican issue and what is not. But it seems like this should finally get done.
Well, leadership did kind of stand, I don't know if down, but they stood back on this one. Obviously, when this was when this was part of the budget process, the ill-fated House budget process. They chopped money out at the Finance Committee level for full-day kindergarten. But if you actually look at the votes of how the Finance Committee members voted yesterday, you know, as a whole, it was a 12-9 vote in favor of committee members. There were two reps out, probably offsetting each other. And if you look at the votes of, you know, named leadership, whips and such, not committee chairs, yesterday's vote was 8-7 in favor. The speaker didn't vote. He was presiding. He'd obviously been fairly loud critic of full-day kindergarten. Jeff, do you think this is a reflection of, you know, the coalition that's built around this outside the State House, the fact that the governor wants it, the senators want it? As Kathleen indicates, the House is a little bit in disarray.
Yeah, I think, well, the governor, it's interesting. I think he worked as hard for this bill as he has for anything this session, and I think it's kind of showing that he's very invested in this. He sees it not just as, a need to improve the education system in the state, but also as an economic development tool. He specifically said that we need to have this to help attract young people to come to the state, to attract employers in the state. And the business community, the business organizations have been pretty vocal in supporting this. The Business and Industry Association, chambers have all said that they've been pushing for this thing as well. And I think that really is just, at this point, I haven't seen this happen before for full-day kindergarten. It's put it on a track for, I think, it's probably going to be approved. We obviously know the governor supports it. And I've never seen this kind of a widespread support outside the legislature. Very, very, very public, very vocal support of it. And I think it's really kind of a realization that, you know, this is 2017, yeah, and we still don't have full-day kindergarten in New Hampshire for everywhere, and I think that's people are realizing it's not just about, you know, providing the you know, each locality providing full-day kindergarten or kindergarten to the children. It's a matter of what kind of state do we have, what kind of it's part of our infrastructure in a way.
Yeah, it's a generational issue. I recall during the leading up to the last election, anytime I asked Republicans and Democrats in the State House, you know, what are some issues that you might be able to work together on? It's always kindergarten is always mentioned, and in a sense, Sununu may get more than he actually asked for, and it'll be a nice item for him to run on the next time around.
Well, what I also think has been interesting is that Democrats are certainly taking credit for this. Obviously, it was, you know, their caucus that got this through, but at the same time, House Democrats, particularly in committee, have been very vocal on this, but no Democrats got up to speak about this on the floor yesterday. It's like the leadership, it appears that their approach to this session has kind of been sit back and let it play out among the Republicans. The Democratic leadership, sit back and let it play out among the Republicans. And you know, it's no secret that they support this, but I guess I was a little bit surprised to see that no one in the Democratic caucus used yesterday as an opportunity to get up and, you know, make a pitch for why Democrats are behind this and why this is a good thing for New Hampshire. Because, I mean, when you aren't speaking out on the floor and things like that, it's sort of like it leaves you out of the press coverage, right? And it, so you can go claim credit, but you're not out there on the floor, you know, vocally saying why you support this. And I guess I just found that to be surprising yesterday. During the vote.
It was an interesting strategy or non-strategy to do that because, Democratic Party certainly took credit shortly thereafter sending out press releases saying, you know, this wouldn't happen without Democrats. What the Democrats did is not Republicans, that kind of thing. And it really is interesting because basically what we end up with is the governor taking credit for it. We'll get the credit for it.
Exactly. All right, and it's on to the Finance Committee, and then it will be back in perhaps the same form, perhaps changed for another vote. In the meantime, certainly the organizational efforts in support of this, continue. I get a lot of press releases on this. Why don't we go to the phones? Mark is on the line from Laconia. Good morning, Mark. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate the conversation you guys are having this morning, and I enjoy the show. I just want to point out as a business owner from Laconia that, unfortunately, someone like Representative Fisher does not represent the values of our community, and it pains me greatly when it seems that continuously this seat is filled by people that are really not representing what the city of Laconia stands for. Mr. Fisher is holding the seat that was previously held by Mr. Acanero, who famously said that people shouldn't come up to our city unless they have bags on their heads. And as far as the equivalent between what Representative Frost did and what Representative Fisher did, the two are completely not equatable at all.
Had you heard of Representative Fisher prior to this controversy?
I had seen him at a couple of forums, and he seemed quite reasonable. But he was also sitting next to Harry Acanero at the time, so that wasn't very difficult to achieve. But, you know, what Representative Fisher did was he covered his name, he used an anonymous name in an anonymous forum, and what Representative Frost did was use her own name out in the open. Even the Republican State Party chairperson said, it's clear Representative Fisher knew he was doing something wrong because he didn't even use his own name and he tried to cover it up.
All right. Thanks for the call. It'll be interesting to see what happens in that. And I believe, Kathleen, correct me if I'm wrong, that Representative Fisher's hearing is on Tuesday.
Yes.
Representative Frost will be on Wednesday. Besides kindergarten, another high-profile bill that passed the House yesterday was tighter rape shield law. Big, big margin there. I think it was over 10-1. This springs from the Lizzie Marriott murder and the trial of Seth Mazzaglia, who's now serving a life sentence for strangling Lizzie Marriott, who was a UNH student. The bill makes a difference of sexual activities under the rape shield law more specific, including not simply prior acts, but also thoughts and expressions. This was backed by coalition of entities, the ACLU, a coalition against sexual and domestic violence. Big push. I think I've lost count on the number of press releases I've received on this one. Governor Sununu's to sign it. Kathleen, this was a bill that passed with great popularity. I mean, is there a sense that this was, something people had a real visceral reaction to Seth Mazzaglia, or that this was at issue in other trials as well?
I think the Lizzie Marriott, Seth Mazzaglia case certainly puts a face on it. And Lizzie Marriott's father, Bob Marriott, has been, up at the State House talking to lawmakers, testifying on this bill. He's been very vocal on this issue. So I think anytime you have someone who's been affected by an issue who comes forward, that makes lawmakers think a little bit differently because you're not just talking about some ambiguous issue. You're looking someone in the eye. Part of me, though, wonders if things with this bill might have been different had this Robert Fisher news not broken, because the day that came out was the day that this was in a House committee where the committee had been talking about watering down the bill. And there was some real concern raised. Some Republicans weren't comfortable with that definition of, you know, what is sexual activity that is covered under the rape shield law. And we're talking about, you know, removing that language. And, you know, that morning, the speaker, his chief of staff, they went in, they talked to the committee. They ended up getting a strong committee vote. Had this news of a state representative, you know, making, you know, what everyone I think agreed were pretty kind of disgusting comments about women, maybe there would not have been such a push to get this through or to not amend the bill. And particularly yesterday, I mean, after you're having a discussion in the morning about online comments someone is making degrading women, if you come back later in the day and you have anything less than a very strong vote for a bill strengthening the rape shield law, things really don't look good for the New Hampshire House. So I think in some form this would have gotten through no matter what. I'm not suggesting that it wouldn't have, but I think that...
And there were alternate. There were different versions of this, were there
right.
not?
So
and there was one that was
what happened
bit...
is one went through the House that did not have that definition. And then the Senate version had that definition in it. And there was... suspicion that the House committee, some people were raising questions that they were going to again get rid of that definition, which advocates said, you know, basically, if you don't include that definition, you're not really doing anything with this bill. And there was a lot of, kind of uproar of people saying you have to keep that definition in there. And no one really knew what the House committee was going to do. Even some Republicans, Representative Rouillard, you know, said that she didn't think the language was perfect, but she ended up saying, you know, this is the right thing to do. We need to pass this. I think overall the New Hampshire legislature in the past couple of years, you know, has on the whole taken legislation dealing with sexual and domestic violence very seriously and has a pretty strong track record of, you know, passing legislation aimed at strengthening these laws. I think that the people at the State House who fight on that issue have a great deal of respect among lawmakers in both parties and have been very successful. So it's and especially having a face on the case, it's not surprising that it passed. But, you know, things might have looked a little different had this Fisher news not come out, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think I what was it, 30 votes against out of almost over 400 cast. And I mean, not over four, almost 400 cast. And we don't need to add to the House. We have 400 is enough. But, I think just judging by how other kinds of votes, similar kind of things go, that there probably were a number of people who were convinced that they shouldn't, you know, fall on their sword on this one when really considering the atmosphere right now, it was not the right thing to do.
You can't underestimate the impact of situational politics.
Exactly.
Although this did get a tremendous amount of coverage and visibility with the Mazzaglia trial.
Yes.
I think sort of the average person probably wasn't even aware that there was this sort of question of whether or not you could use that information and how it could be used. And so it really got, I think the impetus really started there.
Yeah, you could argue that if it wasn't for this horrible murder of Lizzie Marriott, that we wouldn't even have a racial law, right? Or probably a racial law.
Well, not in this tighter.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Not at this level. Yeah.
Well, I mean, basically for people that don't know what this bill does is it just, one, it clarifies that the rape shield law applies at any level because it was in Mazzaglia's appeal where he was trying to include this info. And it, you know, more explicitly says it's not just past sexual acts, but maybe something that you said or may have thought also. And it still does. The concern from opponents was that it would have taken away discretion from judges to decide if they wanted to admit evidence. And judges still, I mean, this says kind of as a broad policy that stuff is not admissible, but in a specific case where a defense attorney to make a pitch to get some type of evidence in, the judge still has the ability to do that.
All right, tell us what you think. This is the Weekly New Hampshire Roundup and Exchange. I'm Josh Rogers. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email at exchange@nhpr or nhprexchange on Facebook and Twitter. You know, the House had a lot of things on the calendar yesterday, and, you know, I was kind of bogged down with the Fisher and Frost and kindergarten, but there were some low-profile yet significant bills that passed, including a bill that passed without debate, which was to facilitate needle exchanges in New Hampshire, which is, you know, a growing public health issue. This bill would allow nonprofits and health centers to hand out clean syringes in exchange for new ones. currently you can't do this under the law in New Hampshire. And the thing that this has been debated for several years now, and there's this sort of trace amounts issue that came up in the bill, that having trace amounts of heroin, cocaine, or you know anything anyone would likely inject is currently a felony. But under this bill, that would be dropped to a misdemeanor. And if one were registered in a needle exchange program, they would be exempt. And you know, we've all read accounts of the kind of roadside needles, and I don't know if you've ever had cause to sort of run into a needle on the bathroom floor of a gas station or something, but that is happening in New Hampshire.
There have been a slew of newspaper articles, front page of the Concord Monitor, the Union Leader, about parks where kids and people walking their dogs are finding needles and in streams, and it's just become a terrible problem. And as you mentioned, Josh, we've been talking about this for several years, and the issue was that the trace amounts aspect of it, and you know what that means for you in terms of sort of potential legal problems.
Well, I think this is one of those, you know, every session there's a couple issues that, you know, the session before they're like a big deal and there's a huge debate, and then the next session it completely flies under the radar and it just goes through, because there was a huge, I think it was Representative Joe Hannon, a Republican who's not even in the House anymore, was really fighting for this last year, and I think it got caught up in the Senate.
Well, it got through the House with ease, they were confident that it would probably
pass. Right, and then the Senate, you know, started to take issues with it. I mean, the Senate typically is a little bit more, not like police friendly, but on criminal justice issues, they're a little bit more conservative typically than the House. And something people were talking about and writing a lot. And then this time, the bill itself, you just haven't really heard a lot about it. It's kind of flown under the radar as other things, you know, take the spotlight. And I think every session you get a couple issues like that, which is always good. You know, if you're the sponsor, you maybe don't want your bill to be in the spotlight because it can kind of make its way through the process without anybody noticing. And I think there was an amendment on the House bill, so there might be a committee of conference or something. But
yes,
you know, both chambers,
the governor signaled he's
both
he's
chambers policy wise too. Like seem to be behind this.
But also in the last year since the previous legislation, you know, this crisis has just reached a crescendo, and let's hope it's a crescendo, because that it's just been just so terrible. And I think nothing like that really helps focus on what the issues are. And I think that gave some kind of motivation to just say, we got to do this. We have to do something about it. We can worry about any kind of ramifications later on, but we have to address this issue now.
All right, I have a few emails. One on full day kindergarten. Full day kindergarten is another transfer of wealth from taxpayers to public schools, says Logan of Exeter. I'm extremely dismayed the legislature did not pass the homeschool bill in order to give families who want to control their children's education their property taxes back in order to do that. That's the so-called Freedom Savings Account bill that is being retained. Another comment on the First Amendment and Representatives Fisher and Frost, and that is, just because you're an elected representative doesn't mean you lose your First Amendment protections, including the right to create a platform for others to express their protected speech. That's also from Logan from Exeter. And, we'll see what the committee makes of that when they convene on Tuesday and Wednesday for Representatives Fisher and Frost. You know, we were talking about the needle exchange bill, something with serious public health implications that went through a pretty low profile. Another bill that the House took up yesterday was one mandating more lead testing for children between the ages of 1 and 2. And, you know, more testing will mean more abatements is needed. And so this was a concern with landlords. I know that your papers covered this a bit, Jeff. Why is this bill significant?
Well, first of all, it would be the first time that the state actually would set up a fund to provide money to help landlords pay for this abatement. This has been an issue that's been going on for many, many years. We have, there's a lot of old housing in New Hampshire with where lead is, you know, in the paint, and has had very serious, you know, ramifications for babies.
And that bill is off to finance, so, you know, stay tuned on it,
the. Yeah, absolutely, because there is money involved, yeah.
Be back after a minute. This is New Hampshire Weekly, New Hampshire News Roundup on the Exchange.
Hi, my name is Arielle. I'm calling from Derry.
My name is Elise. I'm from Alaska.
My name is Ina, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the streets of New York City, NHPR's Civics 101 is your guide to how American democracy works.
I had a question about term limits.
How does the Electoral College work?
Can you help me explain the National Security Council to my students?
Subscribe to the podcast and submit your questions at civics101podcast.org.
This is the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. I'm Josh Rogers. As always, call us, join us. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can track us down on Facebook and Twitter. Joined this week by Dean Spilliota, Southern New Hampshire University, Jeff Feingold, New Hampshire Business Review, and Kathleen Ronan of the Associated Press. You know, we've been talking about all the things that passed yesterday, or at least got shuffled off to finance. Not everything did. Gambling to casino bill went down, you know, kind of really went bust in the House yesterday, 275 to 82, and indefinitely postponed as well, or reconsidered, so it's not going to come up next year. You know, is this, I don't know how many times this question can be asked or contemplated, but I mean, do you think that we've reached the end of the line on serious consideration of gambling? This did pass the Senate, and may be able to continue passing the Senate as long as Senate President Morrison, Senator D'Alessandro are there. But is this the end?
I think that, you know, just economically, I think it's the end. I mean, I think there's so much gambling going on all around us, Maine, Massachusetts, that it's just, I just don't think it's feasible at this point for New Hampshire to actually get the kind of money that supporters had said that we could get 10 years ago when these bills first started coming up. And I think that dawns on people that it's just I'm not quite sure if it's worth the fight anymore, because the House is just the burial ground for this thing, and obviously it doesn't seem to be any kind of interest.
Well, it just doesn't really get anyone's blood up. I mean,
no, it's not the way it
mine
used to
included.
Be.
Yeah. You know, as a reporter, it's like, you know,
there we go again.
Basically, like, don't want to show up in the legislative office building lobby when there happens to be a press conference regarding gambling. It's kind of like scuttle to the side, hope they don't notice you.
I think it also makes a difference when you have a governor who's out in front on the issue, expending political capital like Maggie Hassan did in that first budget, which was one of the centerpieces of her financing. And Jeff, you're absolutely right that this is an issue. I've lived in a number of states where this has been litigated for decades at this point. And there was a time where it was sort of like the golden egg or the golden goose, where it's like you wanted to be the first state to have gambling, and now it's just a very different, much more kind of fragmented market. And there's real questions about whether or not we can support casinos.
Well, it's absolutely. There's even questions about, you know, how successful the casinos will be in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And you know, well, once Massachusetts approved it and we hadn't, and New Hampshire hadn't, I figured that was the writing was on the wall, because we wouldn't be able, that's the market you were looking for with the Massachusetts residents coming up here to gamble. And they're not going to be coming up here. They'll be staying at home.
And you have Connecticut.
Rhode Island, Maine.
Yeah, there's a lot. Maine, that's right, Maine, yep.
And Canada. And
let's not forget Canada.
And, you know, the Senate obviously was probably they've seen their bills fail in the House on gambling enough to know that this failure was probably likely. I mean, the Senate is kind of hip deep in the budget. You know, revenues continue to come in pretty strong. You know, as we've mentioned, Kathleen, mental health and DCYF have been a big public focus of Senate leaders. You know, we're likely to see that reflected in the budget. The Senate did have a public hearing. The budget, you were at that? No? I mean, what was there anything that came out of that that freshened the discussion at all?
No, I mean, to be honest, I didn't go because I figured that it was, you know, probably going to be kind of similar arguments that we had heard. But I think NHPR actually had a story that that funding for like domestic violence shelter programs and things was a big topic of debate. Again, you know, that's always been a big push, but I think especially in light of the Robert Fisher news, you know, there was a kind of a renewed push for that. So New News, you know, we give pretty limited funding already to domestic violence shelter programs, and Sununu's initial budget had cut that a little bit. And so in the House hearing as well, we heard people showing up and testifying that we needed more money for that because the shelters do turn away more than hundreds, maybe thousands of women every year because they don't have capacity to take them. So I think that came up a lot. Typically in these hearings, you hear a lot of mental health, developmental disabilities. You know, right now the Senate just seems to be kind of trying to take everything in. I mean, they haven't really started taking a lot of action yet. They're still kind of in the process of working through the governor's budget. But in the next couple of weeks, I think we'll start to see them really
taking action. I think the issue on the domestic violence that you were discussing, the money for programs for that was cut, I think, 6 years ago. And and not restored, and now Governor Sununu is funding it at the current level.
His budget actually reduced it, I think, by about $20,000. Some I don't know the exact number, but it did reduce it off what it is now.
Right, former state party chair, Republican state party chair Jennifer Horn testified about her daughter's experience, which that got a lot of coverage as well. So it certainly seems like the session sort of focused on that pretty extensively.
All right, why don't we go to the phones? Ellen is on the line from Concord. I understand you were at the budget hearing. Ellen, what did you make of it?
Well, as a fairly newcomer to New Hampshire citizenry, although I've worked in Concord for 22 years, I was fascinated by the process. I was amazed by the resilience of the committee to stay for so long. I bailed a few hours, but I know I was over 5 hours there at one and then again at the 6 o'clock session. And I just wanted to say thank you to the representatives, but I think I was the only person there in the time I was there to ask for funding for continued art support in music, especially because that's my field, but mainly because with all the concerns of veteran suicide and, oh my gosh, the stories I heard on domestic violence and teen suicide and just the homeless, I just can't help but ask the state of New Hampshire and our representatives to consider thinking of music research because, as I stated, and I don't have it right now, but Singing on the Brain, something like that, from various studies in Time Magazine in 2012, and neurology studies with Alzheimer's, how music brings back brain activity. It stimulates brain activity. It releases endorphins because it creates an oxytocin, not oxycodone effect. And
all right, I'm not going to argue with you on, music definitely helps my brain. Thanks for the call. Glad you enjoyed the hearing. You know, these hearings are very interesting in terms of, you know, there are the cliche is like, oh, well, budget's about competing priorities and making hard choices. But it's true. I mean, there are many choices that need to be made, many competing priorities, many different, the public testimony. I mean, as Kathleen had indicated, I mean, it's often a parade of people hoping for funding for, social service programs. And it will be interesting to see what the Senate ends up doing. They sort of playing it pretty close to the vest thus far. A lot of people seem to think that, Senate President Morse has this, calculator running in his mind about, where the budget's going to land. And, that Gary Daniels, who's the chairman of finance, is really just going to be the sort of vehicle for Senator Morris's vision. I mean, people certainly said the same when Jeanie Forrester was Senate finance chair. Morris is seen as the kind of budget heavyweight in the Senate.
Yeah, and I want to say that hearing the other day does point out, a lot of the needs that we have in the state. There are a lot of demands for the limited resources that New Hampshire, chooses to spend. And if you listen to some of those stories, you can't argue with any of them, including music. I mean, seriously, there's a lot of need, it's not an easy task what the Senate's going through.
And Ellen is also right that members of the General Court and the State Senate are very good at sitting for long periods of time. That's one thing I've observed of them through the years. Jeff, the budget in Congress is not the only budget that people in New Hampshire are thinking about. Your paper had an article about how New Hampshire businesses are keeping their eyes on the federal budget. We obviously now have a resolution that's going to kind of keep things, sort of steady as we go through September. But what are local businesses thinking about as they look past the horizon and some of the things that President Trump has proposed?
Well, among the proposals of the president, we don't know what's going to happen with this budget at all. A lot of businesses in New Hampshire benefit from programs, federal programs that provide money to the state and to local nonprofits and other quasi-governmental organizations. And it's whether it's development, whether it's helping businesses on trade assistance, all kinds of things. And a lot of businesses in New Hampshire are concerned about that we've talked to were concerned about what the effect would be on their ability to do business. We found one business in I think it was towards the seacoast that had actually has this, federal government has this program where the Department of Commerce will actually be like, represents you overseas to help you vet out a supplier or a vendor or a customer, make sure they're legitimate, and it costs the company $750. If they had to hire their own representative, it would be thousands of dollars. And they are able to expand their markets internationally, which is something, a big push that's being made in New Hampshire to make companies understand this, to take advantage of the global marketplace. And it runs the whole gamut in terms of development programs and in terms of construction and economic development. So they're keeping a close eye on this because when you hear about the budget, the Trump's budget, you hear about the effects whether it's going to be Medicaid or are they going to cut Medicare? They're going to help cut health care. They're going to cut all these other things. But it's Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Get that plug in there. National Endowment for the Arts. All that stuff. But this is something that specifically affects businesses and businesses in New Hampshire that have been benefiting from these federal programs.
Well, and certainly the budget is not the only thing that New Hampshire businesses are focusing on in Washington. Obviously, yesterday, U.S. Yeah. House passed the American Health Care Act, certainly seen and at least claimed as a big win for the president. There are many, many steps left, including possible rewrites or impasse in the state, in the U.S. Senate. Early reaction from New Hampshire seems to be concern from providers about what this bill would mean, at least as it's understood.
Because by and large, providers in New Hampshire have benefited from this from Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. There have been tens of thousands of more people who are insured now, who weren't insured before. And in terms of hospitals, they're getting compensated for providing services that they weren't getting compensated for before. It's up in the air because people are still reading the bill now after they voted for it, which is not unusual. But to have that that rally yesterday is kind of reminded me of Mission Accomplished with George W. Bush. That didn't really work out too well either.
Well, it is interesting, as you mentioned. The numbers from the state suggest that the level of uninsured people in New Hampshire dropped. It's basically cut in half.
Yes.
I think it went from about
the second best rate in the country.
Yes, that's something that people are going to be looking at, and certainly Governor Sununu. He signed a letter with 15 governors. Kathleen, what did you make of that letter?
Was not terribly specific, right? And Governor Sununu has not been terribly specific about what he would like to see out of that bill or what he does or doesn't like about that bill.
He did say failure to reform is not an option. So,
right. But he's been clear that he didn't in the past want anything that would, hurt the population that is on Medicaid expansion or take away coverage for substance abuse and mental health services. But that letter that he signed with those other governors, it was pretty vague. It certainly was. You saw some other governors. I think John Kasich came out and basically said, this is completely unacceptable. And we need coverage for people with mental illness. We need coverage for people with substance abuse. And Governor Sununu's letter certainly was not that specific. It was sort of this vague, gets better.
When President Trump got in there, the governor said he was optimistic about the implications of potentially moving towards a block grant system for Medicaid. He suggested that he hoped that having a reasonably positive relationship with President Trump would be something that he could trade on to make sure that New Hampshire got flexibility that would, benefit the state. I think the record would reflect that you don't necessarily get anything out of President Trump by thumbing your nose at him. But what you're likely to get out of him for a state like New Hampshire and its needs out of this bill is an open question.
Well, one of the things that's interesting when I mentioned about having the bill just being, we're just learning about it now as it unfurls. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about how the bill contains a provision that basically would cut funding through Medicaid, because Medicaid is used to pay for services that are provided to special education students. And that could be thousands, if not tens of thousands, or even more money just in New Hampshire alone. Because this bill says it's taking away that kind of funding, for children who can't, who are blind, prosthetics, all kinds of things, and this could have a major impact not just on providers but on school districts, which means property taxpayers, will be footing the bill for that. So it's really the governor needs to be cautious on how this bill is going to affect New Hampshire, because we don't know yet, and it looks like it's not going to be positive.
But I mean, what happens in the U.S. House versus what might happen in the U.S. Senate? You know, the political dynamics are quite different. I mean, often what benefits a House member on a tough vote is to kind of lurch towards, you know, the base of their party in the Senate.
Well,
it may not
Right. Well, and you still have the potential for a legislative filibuster in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, has said he will not do away with the rules on the Senate filibuster, but there are budget reconciliation rules you can use to get around that, to do this with 51 votes. I think it's going to be a while yet. I think you're seeing Governor Sununu be more cautious now, because we don't really know kind of what the impact is going to be. And I remember early on in his administration, when he was running for governor, he was very optimistic about Trump and about replace and repeal of Obamacare. And then we had that first bill come out, and there was such a backlash that you could see Sununu become noticeably more cautious. And I think he's going to continue to do that. You know, when the federal government, the Trump administration talks about, you know, more greater flexibility, which some Republican governors want. But the issue is sort of flexibility with how much money. Yeah. So what's going to be the kind of financial impact, regardless of kind of flexibility over how you use it? The issue is, what are you actually going to be getting from the government?
And the other point is that the clock is really ticking on this, because apparently the Senate's not even going to take up this bill for several weeks. And I cannot imagine this bill being voted on in 2018, when so many Republican senators are up for re-election in 2018. I think
this year. They need the cost savings before they can even go do tax reform.
I think there's a very limited window.
Yeah, another interesting bill. You know, shoe that's sort of yet to drop that's will be worth watching will be, you know, the rate filings by insurance companies who are on the Obamacare exchange. Those are going to be released pretty soon, and that's something that could cause a fair amount of consternation.
Yeah.
So I think we're almost out of time. What do we want to be focusing on next week, or what will we be focusing on? I'll leave want out of it. What must we focus on next week? Jeff, what are you going to
Well, unfortunately, that hearing, those hearings on Tuesday, especially the one on Tuesday with Representative Fisher, will be very interesting. They could probably help the budget and you know, raise some revenue by selling tickets to it.
Dean?
I want to try to understand what we were just talking about, which is the impact of the House bill on New Hampshire, and then where the Senate is likely to head on the Obamacare replace and repeal.
Okay, and Kathleen's going to be at the State House, but I do want to note, we learned that she is off to California to join the Bureau out in Sacramento. Always a welcome guest here on the Friday News Roundup. We will miss you.
Good luck, Kathleen.
Thank you.
All right, have a good weekend, everyone. This is the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. I'm Josh Rogers. Have a good one.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.